Welcome to Impacting the Classroom, the podcast where you can listen to dynamic interactions among educators, policymakers, and researchers who are making an impact in education. I'm Arnetta Larimer.
And I'm Darlene Estes Del Rey. Today, we're excited to be joined by three panelists, and we are in for a real good conversation today. First, we have Shanda Parkinson. Shanda currently works for Davis Head Start as the lead education coach, and she received her bachelor's and her master's degrees from Utah State University in family and human development. She also works as adjunct faculty at both Utah State University and Brigham Young University, Idaho, teaching courses in child development, preschool education, and developmentally appropriate curriculum. Her experience includes 8 years within Utah State University's Child Development Laboratories, as well as teaching first and second grade. So welcome, Shanda. I'd also like to introduce you to Amanda Horn. Amanda also works for Davis Head Start, and she works as an education specialist. And what's unique about both Amanda and Shanda is that their Head Start program sits within Davis School District. So that's, they might kind of talk about that later, but I thought I'd point that out in their introduction. But Amanda received her bachelor's degree from Colorado Technical University in criminal justice with an emphasis on human services. And her experience includes 12 years as a general education teacher with special education. And she received the Best of Davis Award awarded to her by Davis School District. Congrats on that honor. Next, I'd like to introduce you to Lauren Bell. Lauren is an associate with Ready Nation. And for those of you who might not be as familiar with Ready Nation, I wanted just to kind of describe their work to you because it's pretty exciting. Ready Nation leverages the experience, influence, and expertise of approximately 3,000 business executives across the country to promote public policies and programs that build a stronger workforce and economy. And this part was super impressive to me. Since 2006, Ready Nation members have made a bottom line case for effective bipartisan investments in children as the future workforce that will drive success in the global marketplace. And Ready Nation is one of three primary membership groups that make up the Council for a Strong America, a 501c3 organization. So Lauren is an associate with Ready Nation. Pretty exciting, right? So, but prior to joining Council for Strong America in 2020, Lauren taught high school math in Kansas City, Missouri through Teach for America. And she holds a bachelor's in political science and economics from Lake Forest College and a master's degree in secondary education from the University of Missouri, St. Louis. So welcome, everyone. I'm going to give it over to Marnetta to get us started.
I'm so excited. Very esteemed guest. I'm going to start with Lauren, and I'm going to do that because we have that Missouri connection. It's where I'm from. So glad to know I have a fellow Missourian with me. So I keep hearing the phrase challenges with the workforce. What are people talking about? Share some of your knowledge with me, Ms. Lauren.
Sure. Glad to know that we have that Missouri connection too. So when we think about the challenges that the early childhood education workforce is facing, and it's increasingly being talked about in the news now, I think about the report that Ready Nation released earlier this month with a panel of business leaders in North Carolina, but the story is similar in states all over. And that's a troubling story that that report tells. Basically, the drain on the economy caused by the lack of quality childcare, which was already sizable before COVID, has gotten even larger. And so the reason why that childcare sector is facing this staffing crisis in combination with the pandemic forced a third of providers to temporarily close their classrooms with little to no notice to parents. And those disruptions, not only are they problematic for children, right, but they send parents, working parents, and other primary caregivers scrambling to find out what to do with their kids. And it's a negative spiral for our economy. So the main point of that report and what I want to get across today is that this is not just a problem for childcare providers to solve or teachers to solve, or even working parents or individual employers who are trying to get their working parents to work. It's all of our problem. And it's going to take all of us working together to solve it. But if I can, I'd love to explain a little bit more of how we got here and what we can do about it. So I'm going to, and I'm a former math teacher, like you said, so I love to share the stats. So I'm going to back up a little bit and just stress the magnitude of this problem. The economic data, like I said, even before the pandemic, is really shocking. So our 2019 Ready Nation report estimated that the lack of affordable quality childcare for infants and toddlers only costs the American economy $57 billion each year due to lost earnings, productivity, and revenue. That's 57 billion with a B. So pretty shocking. And the reason I like to start there is because that study has been cited in well over 500 earned media pieces at this point, including the White House, Time Magazine, and countless other, you know, local news outlets. So we've really done a lot to advance the national discourse on this topic. But as I mentioned earlier, our new research is indicating that the problem is actually getting worse. So this report, The Workforce Behind the Workforce, that we just released in North Carolina, estimated that for their statewide losses, the caused by the lack of affordable quality childcare have grown from $2.4 billion per year to $2.9 billion per year. So when we think about this problem, not just in North Carolina, but across the country, we know that over the course of the pandemic, many jobs are lost nationwide, with childcare issues being one of the main reasons that people are exiting the workforce, especially women. And 167,000 jobs are lost in the childcare industry alone. So we've been in this pandemic a while now. Some businesses are starting to reopen. Some of the childcare providers that existed prior to the pandemic have permanently closed. And those that remain are not going to be able to survive financially if they can't get the workers they need. So that would be even worse, right? Because that would reduce the availability of reliable childcare even further. So that impacts employees' ability to show up to work and be productive across all industries, not just the childcare sector. So that is what we talk about when we say the early childhood educators are the workforce behind the workforce.
So you said a lot, and I'm not a math person, but I understood all those numbers, right? That's a very big impact in our sector, right? Even before the pandemic, you know, which really brought to light some of the challenges that we were already, you know, faced with. It's not just about getting the bodies in. What are some of the other challenges that people are facing?
Yes, I could get into that. Yes. So why haven't we fixed this problem already? One of the main underlying reasons is childcare provider wages. For those of you who don't know, early childhood teachers typically earn substantially less than kindergarten teachers, and childcare directors are really struggling to attract and retain staff due to those low wages. These are people making $10, $12 an hour, and some of these people are really highly educated, just like their public school counterparts. So in North Carolina, I was shocked to hear this stat. It's nearly 40% of early childhood educators that have to rely on public assistance themselves in order to support themselves and their families. So the low compensation was actually the top reason cited by those North Carolina teachers who left the field. So it is a huge issue because educators can leave to work for companies like Target, Amazon, right, where they can earn a higher wage. And so that low supply of qualified providers that we have now, because people are exiting the sector, leads to what we call childcare deserts, right? And that's where there's at least three children interested in that childcare slot, but there's only one of them. So because childcare is so labor intensive, and especially for infants and toddlers, I like to point out that group's particularly labor intensive. that low supply combined with the high demand has just caused prices to rise substantially. So when care is available, it's often unaffordable. Our report also cited that the annual cost of infant care in a center costs more than public college tuition in 31 states and DC. So what that means, what that translates to in real life is parents are competing to add their name to wait lists for exorbitantly expensive care, or alternatively, those who can't afford it are forced to make tough decisions about cutting back hours to juggle childcare challenges, or leaving the workforce entirely to become, you know, full-time caregivers for their children. So, and as we've seen, the trade-off, the parent making that trade-off is usually the mother. So this crisis really does impact all of us, but we know it impacts women and low-income families the most.
Thank you so much for that. For people who want to read up more on this report, what is the name of the report from Ready Nation?
Sure. You can find it on our website, which is strongnation.org/ReadyNation. It is called The Workforce Behind the Workforce in North Carolina. And we typically do these reports for state specifics, but we hope to do this in more states as well and replicate it.
Lauren set us up so well to understand from a national context of the workforce, you know, development issue and, you know, like a long ways from a big solution, obviously. But I was curious from Amanda and Shanda, if you are seeing anything that's, you were like, I saw heads nodding. So I'm thinking like some of these things are resonating with you in your Head Start space or even in the school district space. And wondered if you would speak to that, like what challenges are you seeing that maybe are similar or maybe some others that you wanted to add to the conversation that you're definitely seeing show up in Utah in your space. And maybe we'll start with Shanda to share first, and then we'll hear from Amanda.
Yeah, I agree with you, Lauren. We are seeing similar typically. So, well, first to explain a little bit, our Head Start program is very fortunate because we are housed under the umbrella of a school district. Therefore, we are able to offer our early childhood educators a little better wages than you would find in the community. And because we're housed in the school district, we're able to offer a benefits package with retirement and insurance and whatnot. So that is a draw to our program. So that is very helpful. And typically we see really high retention rates in our program. We've had teachers stay for all the way through retirement. And last year we had quite a few retire from our program, but this year in particular, as Lauren was saying, we lost 40% of our staff, of our lead teachers in our Head Start classrooms. And we have, Amanda, how many classrooms do we have exactly? I'm drawing a blank in my head.
We have 24 preschool classrooms and then 11 early Head Start, I believe.
Yes. Yeah, so we lost a big chunk of those this year. And of course, our minds twirl like yours of how can we, and of course, a lot of them were because they retired this last year, and or a couple of them even retired, took the early retirement and went left a little bit early because of the pandemic and whatnot. But we lost quite a few, and we circle around to why could that be? And a lot of thoughts have gone through our head. And of course, wages is one of them. And even though we are competitive with other childcares, when you look at the school district, we have a particular challenge because our classrooms are housed inside of elementary schools. So that we're Head Start classrooms, but the district gives us space inside of the elementary school so that the children, the Head Start children, can attend their school that they will be going into as they, or a very local school for that's nearby their home. So what this does is it places our teachers in a elementary school environment, and they have this collaborative environment with a principal and other kindergarten and elementary school teachers, and they get to know them and have this great family around them of course, their Head Start family, which is us, that we go out and support and help, but then they have this elementary family as well. And in the state of Utah, there's a program that's an alternative pathway to licensure, that if they have a bachelor's degree and they have a principal that accepts them into this alternative pathway to licensure, they can become a certified elementary teacher and get paid double. So we have lost several of them to this program because they go and they get housed in the school district, and then they realize they can make double the wages by moving into a certified teaching position. So that's one challenge that we definitely face. Another challenge that I would say that the director of our program and I were talking the other day, and we have the lead teachers in our classrooms, but we also have teacher assistants in the classrooms. And typically, in typical years, these are moms that come, women that come into our program, and they want a job that they can work while their children are at school. And so we're just a perfect fit for them, even though it's lower wages, because their children are at school, they can come in, we're on the same school district calendar, they have summers off, they're home, they're able to get their children to school, then they're there at work while their children are in school, and then they're able to go home and be with their children when their children get out of school, because we follow that school district calendar. And this year, we are having a hard time staffing those positions. And one of the reasons that we've been toying with as maybe of why this is happening is because of the government checks that are coming to families. So I know, you know, for myself, I'm a mom of four children, and because I have four children, I'm getting a monthly stipend for my children. And that monthly stipend, there was a time in my life that I stayed home to be with my children, and I did take a little part-time job, even though I have a master's degree in working in a school for just $10 an hour, just because I wanted to be there for my children. And these checks that are coming in from the government are more than I made doing that. And so if I was back in that position, I wouldn't have needed to go out and get that part-time job while my kids are at school, because the supplemental money that I needed is coming in a different way.
I was thinking about all that you kind of laid out for us, and that even pre-COVID, it sounded like, you know, you have the advantage of being in that school district. So you have those attractors. You know, it sounded like I heard lots of things. I heard like the wages that are higher than maybe in the community. I also heard support system, because that's super important for, you know, people staying in the job where they're at. So they have the support, the collaboration, those pieces. They're with their children, typically, maybe like on the same schedules and things. And then I also heard that, you know, they had the perk of retirement, which is a good thing, right?
It is.
But then it just so happened to be this time span when so many were retiring. So it's like, we always try to future plan, but I wonder, in thinking about the challenge of that, and now, I mean, enter the pandemic is one thing too, but even pre-pandemic, what are some strategies that have been successful, even if you take the pandemic outside of it, for filling that pipeline, and thinking about, you know, just had a large amount retire at once, but sounds like in the past, like moms were part of that pipeline. I think I heard you say there was like a pathway, an alternative pathway for teachers. Are there any others? I was just curious to know, because other people listening are like, what works? You know, how do you fill that pipeline and make teaching the best profession anybody wants to go into, and they also want to come to Utah, right? That's right. What you're trying to do is like, come here. And so what works, or what would you want to do?
Yeah, well, let me just clarify a little bit. So at least in Utah, and I have kind of a dual role. I work here, and I also, as mentioned in my bio, I teach some courses at some local universities as well. And in these universities that are in Utah or near our regional area, there are two different programs that filter our teachers into our education system. And one is the elementary education program, and they have a certification of early childhood. And those, when they go to the university, they end up with a certification in teaching K through 8 or K through 6 or K through 3 if it's the early childhood. And it's not necessarily preschool or early childhood. They do take some courses, which was my course, to get an introduction to that. But when they graduate, they get a certification. They take the praxis and they have a certification to teach in the public school system. And that pays twice what, or as Lauren was saying, maybe even more than twice what our pre-K teachers make. Now there's another route, and that's the family services route, which is family and human development at Utah State University, or child development at the other university that I teach at. And those are your family services, which is usually where we get funneled our teachers for childcare and Head Start. And they don't get a certification in teaching public school. They end up with a bachelor's degree and can work in the human services department. And that's where we get most of our educators in our program are from those family services fields. We require an associate's degree, but our program emphasizes that we really want bachelor's. So most of our staff have bachelor's degrees in a family services field. And then
out of our teachers, I would say out of 80% of our lead teachers all hold a bachelor's degree. There are only a trickling of few that have associates in early childhood, because we really have wanted to set that bar of the standard for us to give a high quality education and with our kiddos.
Thank you, Amanda. And what we're saying to them, the message that's coming across is our early childhood majors who are resulting in their degree having a certification with them is worth twice as much as those who are getting the same amount of education, bachelor's degree in the family services fields. And so, because their salary is twice as high, even though we know there's a big debate nationwide too, that elementary school teachers' wages are too low. You look at early childhood and it's much, much lower than that even. And I would say that our wonderful Head Starts and early childhood teachers and infant toddler teachers work just as hard. And I've been in the elementary field as well. I've been in classrooms there, and it's very, very similar work, just as hard of work. And that's the message that's coming across to them, is that their wages are half and not as important. And so this alternative pathway to licensure that's in the state of Utah is the answer that the elementary schools have come up with for recruiting more educators. Is if you even have a bachelor's degree and you didn't go to elementary through the elementary channel and or the early childhood channel and you didn't get your certification, we will help you get a certification if you have a bachelor's degree. Come work for us for a year and we'll put you on this path, and within 3 years you'll have your certification just as if you had graduated in early childhood. And so our teachers who have bachelor's degrees are going into this environment that they're meeting up with principals who are willing to partner them in, and then they are able to get their license within 3 years. So my question, that's the challenge that we have there.
Yeah. My question would be, you know, how do you, because that's at a detriment to yourself, right? As a program. You're just like, hey, let me give you all those tutelage and all this, you know, yeah. And yeah. Then, hi, it was nice seeing you, right?
Exactly.
So what do you do, you know, to convince them to stay? Like, how do we keep them, you know, where they, yes, they have this option, but this is where they choose to be? Like, what do you do?
Our director is working really, really hard on this. And I had a conversation with her last week about it. Unfortunately, she couldn't join us today because we're in our federal review process this week for our Head Start program. But she really considers this a very, very serious thing and works really hard to make our Head Start family a family environment. And Amanda, do you want to tell them just a little bit about the SHIP program that our director has really been highlighting this year and trying to help us with staff health and mental health?
Yeah, we've, I just, I will do that, yes. But I also want to touch base with what Marnita was saying. Another thing that, yes, Utah does offer that license, alternative licensing. But one thing I think that helps us retain staff is the fact that they have a co-teacher in the classroom with their, you know, I've been in the classroom, like Shannon's been there, I mean, and Lauren as well. I mean, you're in there with 30 kids and, you know, you have to go to the restroom and you're like, okay, how can I time it to leave? But what's so nice is we're giving them the opportunity to have somebody in their class with them. So it's two teachers in the classroom. Yes, one is the lead who is the main teacher. And then we have our co-teacher who steps up and does just as much and does all the same things with there. So that's always really great and a great benefit that we have that we offer our staff that I feel like our teachers appreciate because then they're sharing the workload and it does make it a little bit easier. And then just like Shannon was saying, we've within the last 2 years, we have been implementing our staff wellness. It's SHIP this year. Shanda, I can never remember what it's staff
health improvement program, I think.
Yes. And so what that does, I'm so sorry, you guys, like, but I can never remember that. And I'm even on the committee and I can't remember it. So it's kind of bad on myself, so I apologize. So we do these activities and we send out mindfulness things and reminders of helping our teachers, like, okay, today, like for instance, right before the Thanksgiving break, we talked about how, like, how can we take time to just be in the moment of living in the moment and breathing and self-care. And we did a big staff training on, it was actually like a questionnaire that we had to go through and answer, and it graded you and it told you if you were great at self-care or if you really needed to improve it, which I myself had to improve it, but then it gave you strategies to help improve your self-care. And so we filter that down as leadership into our teachers and do train them on those same things as well and work on, you know, knowing when to say, you know what, this will be here tomorrow. It's okay. And it's okay that this will be put off until tomorrow. It, you know, I mean, especially with us being a federally funded program, we have, you know, when school first starts, we have 45 days and we have a bunch of screeners and assessments we have to get done within those 45 days to stay in compliance with our federal government and guidelines. But then we talk about, you know, now take the breath. Let's take time for ourselves. Learning is fun. We don't want to burn you out. We want to make sure. And so we've implemented this year doing like a gratitude journal and our staff have been just writing one thing that kind of was like, okay, here's my crazy thought. And then this made me laugh today. And we talk about it in our team and group meetings and in our education thing. We have a leadership and education meetings that we often do. And then with our team meetings, we go around and we stay, okay, before we get on to the nitty gritty of what's going on in our team, I want us to say, what are we thankful for today? Or what are we grateful for? What made me smile today? Just to really focus on that positivity as a group, because we all know we've been in the trenches of those classrooms. And some days it's those little tiny things that you're like, you know, a student just telling you not to be a hater, love is magical. And you're like, you know what? You're right. It is. So just kind of really bringing the morale up that way and working on just improving our overall health. So that way that we're not getting, you know, teachers to burn out or like Shanna said, be like, you know what? I'm getting this check and I'm making more. So maybe I'll just kind of hightail it out of there and just stay home for a while. So.
Thank you, Amanda. Another thing that our director mentioned was, and she really puts a lot of effort into this mental health program, which we really, really appreciate. And we try hard to be flexible as much as we can. We know that they need to be there when the children are there. And we try to offer them, you know, time off if they are sick. And luckily in the school district, we do have the option to have the sick leave with us. I know a lot of childcares don't have that option, but that is a draw and very helpful for where we are in our program. And that does help people to stay and to be drawn to our program, those health and wellness benefits. And another thing that we do in Head Start is that we have a great support system with leadership and coaching and supervisors. So each of our teachers have a supervisor, which is Amanda. That Amanda is in that role where they have a supervisor that goes in to their classroom regularly. As I mentioned before, they're all out in these elementary schools. So we have this challenge of helping them to feel part of their elementary team, but also helping them to feel part of our Head Start family. And so Amanda goes out and visits her teachers and answers questions for them and helps them to feel trained and that they can do their job and have the materials and the resources that they need. And then on my end, I am the lead coach in our program, and we have a team of coaches, and we assign each of our staff members a coach. And we use class, TeachStone, and we go out and we do the class assessments on our teachers to look at quality teaching practices in their classroom in the beginning of the year, middle of the year, and at the end of the year. And we use that data to help identify quality teaching practices that can happen in the classroom that can be improved upon. And we use TeachStone resources to help coach one-on-one individually our teachers. And so I instruct the coaches to go out. We assess where the teachers are, and then we really identify specific teaching practices that will help them improve their quality teaching practices. And they go out and spend time with them each week in their classrooms. Those that are brand new teachers get more time with their coach, so they get that more intensive coaching with their coach. And we're able to really help them to answer questions. We talk to them. We help them identify those quality teaching practices and really improve on their teaching skills. And I think that support system that they feel from us and that coaching and feeling like they are a professional, getting not only group trained from the whole program, but individually getting that personalized individual attention from a coach is really helpful as well to help them get that professional development that they need to feel competent in their field and feel supported in their role.
Thank you so much.
I would have to agree with that. So, and we do, and like Shannon was saying, like the supervisors, it's not just me. I can't be in 24 classrooms. I mean, although I would like to because I like control, but I cannot do it myself. So like Shanda, I have a team with me and we go in and we just piggyback on everything that Shanda does and they do the same thing. And we're just guiding and supporting and training and just making them feel like they're getting the best in their workforce services. So
thank you so much. As we've, you know, had this discussion, I think I want to bring it back to Lauren, and I want to ask, you know, what kind of solutions, right, can you think of that can fix these problems that we discussed today?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Shanda and Amanda were really on point when they started the conversation with federal funding conversation, because we do have to keep in mind that the majority of funding for these early care and learning programs does come from federal dollars. So when it comes to thinking about how states can best, you know, spend down those dollars, and I might use North Carolina here as an example, but other states have similar programs. There's kind of two main buckets that I think investments are worthwhile that Ready Nation supports. And they're both investments in the childcare workforce. So the first one is programs that provide salary assistance to support childcare workers. And the second is programs that provide education scholarships to early care educators. So many states have programs like they were just describing, where educators who work full-time with infants and toddlers can get special scholarships. And we need to expand those programs and adequately fund them. So as, you know, state legislators begin to vote on their budgets for this upcoming session, we're seeing that even in states where we are seeing promising increases to those, you know, child care assistance programs to help parents be able to afford the high cost of care, we're still not seeing a boost for childcare worker compensation. And without that, the main point of our report is that it's just not enough. So without enough qualified teachers, there's going to be an inadequate supply of childcare. And so any of those other solutions like subsidies, assistance programs are not going to be effective. So I would urge states to provide education, professional development, and compensation to childcare workers, as they've been historically underfunded. So our report specifically cites the budget shortfalls in the teacher education and compensation helps or teach program out of North Carolina, or the early childhood scholarship program, which provides scholarships for 2 and 4 year degree programs in early childhood education, and also the Child Care Wages Project and Infant Toddler Rewards Program. So all of those reward increases in education with additional salary. So these and other similar programs are what is needed to increase retention. I'm happy to talk more about those additional strategies if we had more time, but really we need to make sure that educators are being compensated fairly in order to provide the high quality learning experience for all the children and parents who need it. And remember, like, the high quality aspect of it really does matter. Mm-hmm. So the research shows that so much of a child's brain development is formed in those first 5 years. And so it's going to have a lifelong impact. What these teachers are doing with students every day is important. And we need to make sure that the people who are doing it are well trained and adequately compensated. So I think, you know, it's a bummer that we have this troubling pattern and we know the solution, but we haven't done it yet. So I think that, you know, these conversations and continuing to raise these issues is the most important thing we can do. So that's why Ready Nation engages business leaders on the topic too, because everybody needs to be invested in this if we want to solve this crisis.
Thank you so much for that. And thank you, all of you. We deeply appreciate all of you taking the time to just to have this important discussion with us today and bringing your expertise and even voices from the field and on the ground and across the nation. This is a complex topic, and we are going to work together at it, and nobody's giving up. I hear the passion. I hear the commitment. A lot of work has obviously been done, but there's still a lot of work that needs to still be done, and we all can have a part in doing it together, regardless of our role in education, policy, or research. So thank you again for joining us. We'll post the transcription and related resource on our site, teachstone.com/impacting. And just want to, for all of our podcast listeners, we will see you next episode in January. Oh my goodness, like next year. And where we'll dig into funding. That's always a fun topic. And we will dig into funding and its impact that it's having on early education. Until then, I want you just to enjoy the holidays, and remember that behind great leading and teaching are powerful interactions. So let's build that culture together.